Hello and welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast with me, your co-host, Joe Devine, more like the real host of this podcast. I don't know if you've noticed, I tend to pull the strings that provoke Adam to act in a certain way. That's my job usually. And today I'm doing a much more literal version of that because it's the second episode of Joe Made Me Watch. That's right, if you didn't catch the first episode, last week I made Adam watch the film Lion. That was good fun. And this week, because I'm still busy with the World Cup, I'm making Adam watch First Blood, otherwise known as Rambo 1. I don't know about you, but I always forget that it's called First Blood. I assume it's just called Rambo. But perhaps there's something in that. Who knows? Anyway, here's how Joe Made Me Watch works. I pick films that I force Adam to watch. I introduce them, and I also predict what I think Adam will think of the film and the score that he will give it out of 100. At the end of the episode, you'll hear my prediction. And then you'll hear Adam, so we can see how close I was. Before Adam records anything, he does get to listen to this intro, so you might hear him responding to things that I've said here. But he doesn't hear my score. Okay, First Blood. 1982, let me read the IMDb for this film, because I'm sure that Adam will read the letterboxed. A traumatized Green Beret veteran, Rambo, drifts into a hostile town, triggering a localized war after a wrongful arrest forces him to survive against a vindictive sheriff and an escalating manhunt in the wilderness. They are hunting for a man in the wilderness. Now, why did I pick First Blood, Rambo? I can tell you it's not because it's one of my favorite films. It isn't. It was purely because it was a bizarre gap in Adam's viewing history. If I didn't know, I would never in a million years say that Adam hadn't seen the film Rambo, because he will not stop going on about really boring 80s action movies. I mean, the guy loves Predator and is forever talking about it. And he made me watch Blade recently. He's also always talking about RoboCop. So it is wild to me, the notion that he hasn't seen First Blood. I don't know why. I expect that you'll find out why in this episode. However, that's not to say that I don't think First Blood is a good film. I think it's a very interesting film. It's interesting for a number of reasons, none of them are the action. Okay, reason number one. I think it's a fascinating response to the Vietnam War. Of course, there is a rich history of Vietnam War films in the history of American cinema, many of which have survived as part of the cinematic canon, all of which paint America's role in the war in a negative way. And many of them focus on the trauma that was experienced by the soldiers who were there. Now, Rambo is very interesting because in Rambo, Sylvester Stallone plays John Rambo, or whatever. Is his name John Rambo? I think so. He's just home from Vietnam. He's a traumatized Green Beret veteran, and he's a drifter. And the welcome he receives in this hostile town that he ends up in is no welcome at all. You see, the sheriff of this town, Brian Dennehy, does not want Rambo around. And so one of the reasons I think this is an interesting film is because it's a very sort of literal and then actionized version of a narrative which Americans saw play out pretty readily during the Vietnam War, which is when soldiers returned home. Many of them were traumatized, but they also weren't particularly welcome. There was a wealth of anti-Vietnam protest that was taking place amongst American citizens at the time at home, and often when soldiers came home, they ended up being collateral damage. So that's the first thing. I think it's a very interesting and actionized, if that's a word, response to Vietnam and as far as Vietnam War films go. The second thing is, I think it is, this is one of the reasons I don't like it. It is a bizarre sort of love letter to libertarian American values. There's actually a line in the trailer where the narrator is describing what happens in the film, and it's something along the lines of one town finally pushed a man too far. And so there's this kind of romanticized, idealized notion that in America, truth and valor doesn't have to answer to authority if the authority is corrupt. And that a man with skills and a knife can survive against, in some cases, hundreds of men while in the jungle. Which, of course, incidentally takes me back to point one. Because the fun inversion of this film is that it puts Sylvester Stallone in the position of the Vietnamese soldiers that he's just been fighting, who will have demonstrated this type of guerrilla warfare to Rambo while he was in Vietnam. So it sort of role reverses when he gets home. He's playing the Vietnamese and the township is playing the Americans. So I'd be very curious to hear what Adam thinks about the politics of it all, when he was watching, if he felt that way at all. Because often when I watch these films that appear to have these values, I call bullshit, you know? I just don't believe in that. I don't believe it's real. And then the last thing, number three, would just be, this is a pretty good example of an 80s action movie. It's from 1982, a decade that I don't really like in cinema, but a decade that I think Adam loves. So whilst on the one hand, I would be expecting him to not think very highly of this film, it's also exactly the kind of film that he says he really likes. I don't really see the difference between, Rambo First Blood and Predator, for example. Obviously, there are some science fiction elements in Predator that aren't there in First Blood, but it's all much of a muchness to me. So I do wonder if today we're about to find out what watching and loving something as a child means to an adult watching something similar for the first time. Because I expect him to not really rate this film, despite the fact that, to all intents and purposes, he should. So there we go. That's First Blood, or as I like to call it, Rambo 1. Rambo 1, of course, leaving all kinds of space for 2, 3, 4, and is there maybe even 5 that came after it? And I will say, I don't think Adam's watched those films, but I will say that the funny thing about First Blood, and perhaps this is something that might have surprised Adam a little bit, is that if you've never seen the films, but you're aware of what Rambo is as a kind of action hero character, then you might watch the first film and be surprised how different it is to what you expected. I don't think the people that made this necessarily expected this to turn into a 5-movie franchise, because what Rambo becomes after the first film bears, let's say, little resemblance to what came before. And finally, I'll say, if I had to choose, obviously, I'm a Rocky man. Adam, what about you? Are you Rocky? Are you a Rocky man, or are you a Rambo man? Huh?
Thanks, Joe. Well, what a great intro. What a great question. Am I a Rocky guy or a Rambo guy? Well, it's a trick question, isn't it? I'm a RoboCop guy. I'm neither a Rambo nor Rocky guy. I've got very fond memories of the Rockies. I would have seen them when I was maybe 8 or so. I think I probably would have seen the Dolph Lundgren one first. So I'm a Rocky IV. A Rocky IV guy, if anything. I was never really fussed by Rocky. In fact, I probably hadn't seen the original maybe even once. And I think for the same reasons why I never watched Rambo, it's the same reasons why I never watched Rocky, because they were, both of the films and the series and the characters are sort of so imbued in culture and parody. You sort of feel like you've already seen the movies. And, I skipped Rocky and went straight to Raging Bull as a budding cineast. And, once you've seen Raging Bull, do you need to go back and see Rocky? I guess you do, I suppose. I don't know. I don't know why I've asked such a silly question. Anyway, so, but I mean, if I had to pick which Sly I prefer, I think Sly as Rocky is a lot better. And I say Sly, it's Sylvester Stallone. He's a little bit blank as Rambo. I'll call him by his full name. It's John J. Rambo. And you don't hear the word Rambo so much in First Blood. I started watching First Blood Part 2, and the amount of times he gets called Rambo, it's every other sentence. Rambo this, Rambo that. I had to stop watching First Blood Part 2 because it was a little bit boring and very silly. But yeah, back to First Blood. I guess it's that other question Joe has seeded. This is the film he says I should like, but I probably won't. I mean, he's plum got me wrong. I really enjoyed watching Rambo. I thought this was it's a good little flick, and I'd already had the sense that it wasn't the film that I thought it was, which would be this big action kind of dumb 80s film. The first half is quite small, and it's got a great setup. You know, this Rambo chap, you know, rolls into town. He's looking to connect with an old Vietnam buddy. Turns out to be dead. That's quite sad. This guy's got nowhere. He's got nothing. Strolls through the town and very swiftly gets told to move on by old Brian Dennehy. And It's one of the best scenes in the movie when he's in the cop car with Dennehy, and yeah, it's cracking. It's fantastic. The he gets horribly mistreated by the cops, and the film just starts to ratchet up. And once he busts out of the local prison on a dirt bike, you know, we're off to the races. Rambo on a dirt bike, getting chased by one of those classic sort of Blues Brothers type cop cars, you know, the ones. It's the best action sequence in the movie. It's both kind of big, but it's also quite grounded. Very Dukes of Hazzard. Ted Kotcheff, the director, shoots everything. It's just very workmanlike. There's no fancy shots. You know, there's none of this fancy Steadicam nonsense that you get these days. It's all just very, very solid filmmaking. This is really, really great stuff. And then once you've got Rambo surviving in the woods, it starts to dial up and it kind of starts to get a little bit less interesting. By the time you get to the third act and Rambo's hijacked an army truck and he's got one of these massive, I guess, what, an M16? I don't know if that's what it's called. It hits him on the poster. You know, it's that big, long, mega gun. Then there's this big, there's huge explosions, gunfire. Joe's wrong, I think, that this is different to the latter films. I think in the DNA of Rambo and the end of Rambo, this big explosion-y, shooty finale, that is what the series then becomes. So whilst the first half, two-thirds, starts kind of nice and small, I guess you can already see that Sylvester Stallone wants it to go big and wants it to go silly big, violence and action. And, you know, at that point, I'm a lot less interested. And that's fine, generally, overall. It's a good watch and definitely worth watching. I'm glad I did. Joe's mentioned Vietnam. And I guess what it made me think about watching it was Taxi Driver, which that comes out, I think that's 76 or 77. Travis Bickle in that, played by Robert De Niro. He's a Vietnam War vet. He's isolated, alienated, alone, and he's a taxi driver. And that also culminates in a big bloody bloodbath. I guess Taxi Driver isn't really about Vietnam in the same way that Rambo is, but these two different characters are interesting responses to that. So you have that anti-hero in Taxi Driver, and Scorsese's definitely kind of pitching him as an anti-hero. And you know the ending, the violent ending, is supposed to be ironic. It's not supposed to be a celebration. Whereas Rambo, by the time you get to 82, you're getting into Reagan's America, and Sylvester Stallone, he wants to reframe America's boys, how horribly they were treated. And they came back from this war and they were spat on. And that's very much what Rambo's doing. It's not as interesting psychologically as Taxi Driver. I mean, Sylvester Stallone plays Rambo very, very blank for the whole movie. And I think maybe because he's building up to this big, big scene at the end where he finally breaks and bursts into tears and cries about how many of his friends have died and how there's no place for him anymore. You know, you put him in a tank, he can shoot and kill people, and now he comes back to America and there's no place for him. And he really lays it on thick, crying his heart out, and his old boss gives him a big hug. So it turns out Rambo, all he needed was to have a big hug and I guess be forgiven in some regard. But yeah, that's the interesting thing about Rambo, is it feels like it's got its feet. It's got one foot in the 70s, the first half, very much feels like this kind of more grounded, smaller action survival film, kind of like Southern Comfort or Deliverance. And then the back end, it's got this other foot firmly in the 80s, where things get bigger and explosions get larger. I guess the issues of Rambo, and I guess what it would become, are inbuilt with the kinds of stories, Hollywood stories, that they're telling. Like, these kinds of stories, everything has to get bigger. Everything has to escalate. If you start with a dirt bike chase at the beginning, at the end, you know, the guy's got to be in a truck. If he's knifed some people and set some traps, you know, he needs to start getting some guns and shooting people. And from the film itself, from the first film, that's what happens with the sequel. We want it bigger and we want it the same. We want it the same. It's got to be the same. I think the second thing I really liked about it was it's this classic outsider drifter character who comes into a town. So it also made me think of Westerns and, you know, the Western character like Shane. And it made me think of Last Man Standing with Bruce Willis, which then made me realise, oh, hang on a sec, I know that's a remake of Yojimbo, which is a samurai movie. I didn't first think of Yojimbo, which tells you everything you need to know. I thought of the Bruce Willis remake first, and that's always like a kind of a cracking setup. And what I thought was best about, what's so interesting about Rambo is, as opposed to those other films, this kind of drifter, he kind of goes through the town, and usually it's corrupt, and he's out to fix something. The drifter wants to fix something. He sees something. He's appalled. Someone needs help. Some kind of downtrodden community needs defending. But in this, they're just sort of like quite crummy cops. There's no kind of great conspiracy going on. There's no like secret cabal of drug dealers. It's just these schlubby cops, and that's also what's really nice about it. There's nothing grand about it. The town basically attacks and provokes Rambo, as opposed to him coming in there to save it. And I guess it also that sort of speaks to Joe's problem with it. It's politics. This kind of libertarian distrust of authority and individual freedom that's in there, but it doesn't really lay it on too thick. The cops aren't that corrupt. They're just bad cops and don't treat people very nicely. I was more kind of compelled by this, the notion that the film is this Avenger fantasy, and everything is about giving the hero the situation whereby we can enjoy watching him kill people. And, you know, you see it in the modern day. It's, you know, John Wick, Jack Reacher, The Equalizer. That's what we want to see. The baying audience, we want to identify with the outsider and the loner. And we want to enjoy that fantasy that we would stand up to baddies and horrible people. And we'd set traps and we'd kill them. And in Rambo, he's kind of quite reluctant to do that. I mean, if he wasn't, he would look like a psychopath. He does start to behave quite like a psychopath. Again, I think the film misses a trick in like getting into the psychology of him, and it never really suggests that what Rambo's doing is anything close to insane. Even though it clearly is. But yeah, it can't help but celebrate Rambo. The look, the bandana, the knife, it's all about the knife. Rambo can't help but be a celebration of all that violence. And again, like, I think you're taking it back to Taxi Driver. I was thinking, oh yeah, maybe Taxi Driver is more interesting, and you know, and that's why it's a more important movie. But Travis Bickle has been taken on as a fantasy figure to look up to in the same way that Rambo has. I mean, the Mohawk and Bickle holding the two guns and smiling. Whatever critique Scorsese's got going on in that movie, kind of culture doesn't seem to care, because cinema, as soon as you create these kind of iconic images, a look, you can't help but kind of create admiration for the figure. And then, you know, I'm thinking about these outsiders, and then it, you know, takes me right up to Fight Club. And I've been trying to reclaim Fight Club and from the horrible baddies and the idiots who've taken all the worst elements of that movie and think it's a celebration of hyper masculinity and completely missing that it's a satire of that. But again, like Tyler Durden, Brad Pitt's Tyler Durden is so iconic and admirable. It made me realize, like, you'd get swept away in the fantasy of it. Joe said I should like this, and I probably wouldn't. But as I've said, as discussed, I did like it. He seems to think that this is a good example of 80s action. And I sort of don't think it is. Like, it's nowhere near as good as Predator or even Commando. I mean, I think all the 80s Arnie movies are just better. But also, I would prefer the kind of even sillier Steven Seagals of this era. Out for Justice, Marked for Justice, Marked for Kill, Marked for Death, Marked to Kill. All that one. The one where he's in a coma. That's a good one. There's more fights. There's more bone snapping. The action's more visceral and intense. Here, it's soft and 80s, which I guess Commando is a dialed up version. It's very soft. It's lots of explosions, but then there's just more of it. Commando goes full out and just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger because Rambo presents initially as a more interesting movie. You can't help but feel a little bit disappointed. But yeah, I mean, one of my favourite movies of all time is Die Hard. Die Hard. And that's 1988, so that's 80s. But again, it's just easy to dismiss. The reason why it's not just an action movie. It's a perfectly executed action movie. It's got great characters. It's got great actors in it. And it's the action's superb. It's about a guy who just wants to reconnect with his wife. So it is about something. But yeah, it's not about anything grander than that. And it all just works wonderfully. Also, watching it, I guess one final thought. You watch something like Rambo and Rocky, and then you see how those series continue. Sylvester Stallone sort of came out of nowhere to do Rocky, and then obviously became very, 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 very famous. And I think he has pretty much full control over both of those characters. But he strikes me as someone who doesn't realise why the things he does that are good are good, which I don't know. It's interesting that someone can make something great or interesting and it connect with people, and the person who made that thing tries to repeat it or continue the thing, but then they just fundamentally don't get what it is that people like about the character. How much ownership does Sylvester Stallone have over Rambo and Rocky? Well, they're his and complete ownership. But how much ownership should he have? The same thing with Arnie. I guess Arnie and I like to call him Arnie. He was always very protective over the Terminator character. And Jim Cameron would only think about doing, you know, sequels to the Terminator movies if Arnie was the Terminator. Like, Arnie knows what the Terminator would or wouldn't do. Why is it only Arnie who knows what the Terminator would or wouldn't do? Why is it only Bruce Willis who knows what John McClane would or wouldn't do? And same question for Sylvester Stallone, for Rocky and Rambo. I guess is it because they are, the actor is the icon? The actor's an icon, the character's an icon, and you can't separate the actor from that icon. Keanu Reeves as John Wick seems like the modern version. Like those the John Wick movies don't work without John Wick. As much as they're trying to make that a universe, you know, a TV show. I think there's going to be a spin-off of the latest one with the blind guy. And in that case, it's not Keanu Reeves understands the character. It's the people who made it who misunderstand why people like John Wick. It's not just the fact that it's got shooty, shooty gun guns and great fights executed perfectly. It's because you've got Keanu Reeves at the centre with that character. It's not enough to just take the aesthetic and, you know, make a different story around it. Although, yeah, they tried to do it with Ballerina, with Ana de Armas. I mean, and that they could have just made that movie and not call it in the John Wick universe, and it probably would have gone down loads better. It's a pretty decent action movie. It's got some really fun stuff. The only time it falls down is when it tries to crowbar John Wick stuff back into it. So, yeah, I don't know. I find that interesting. Yeah, people who make great stuff, it does well, you want to make more of it, and then just not realizing what the thing is and why people like it because they're too busy chasing the money. Oh, yeah, that's not very nice for me to say. But anyway, I've gone off tangent. Who would win in a fight between Rambo, Rocky, John McClane, John Wick, Commando? That's what he's not. He's called Commando, isn't he? Commando or Dutch from Predator, or Jack Reacher, or John Equalizer, as I like to call him. So who wins in a fight? I mean, he's just a boxer. So, you know, Reacher or John Wick are going to kick the shit out of Rocky. I think Rambo would kick the shit out of Rocky as well, would knife him. And that's, do they get their weapons? I mean, no guns, maybe? Predator, Dutch from Predator, he's as good at setting traps as Rambo is. You put them in the woods together, they'd be setting loads of traps, like nobody's business. And then they'd just be waiting on each other to go into the other one's traps. And then Dutch goes into Rocky Rambo's traps, and Rocky Rambo goes into Dutch's traps. And then they both get shivved by a whittled bit of wood. What's Jack Reacher doing all the while? Jack Reacher is, it's a movie, so it's got to be Thomas Lee Cruise's Jack Reacher. I'm sorry, I'm not having the big dude from the TV show. So it's basically Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise's Jack Reacher, he's going down. You know, John Wick in a fight is snapping that guy's neck off. John Equalizer, he does a good bit of fighting, but he's aging out a bit. He's better with guns. He's pretty smart. He'd probably be watching Rambo and Dutch setting their traps, and he'd be stroking his chin going, okay, I know what's going on. Maybe he'd let everyone kill each other. And John McClane, I mean, he's just happy to be there. He'd be livening it all up with lots of funny quips. I mean, he is unkillable. So, yeah, John Wick would be battering him in the same way that the other guy, the long-haired blonde guy in Die Hard is battering him. But McClane just keeps getting up, and then he'd find some kind of way, some kind of loop of chains, and he'd wrap them around John Wick's neck, and or he'd like sneak a bomb under his vest, and then he'd say the one-liner and then explode him. I think the action fans are going to say John Wick is gonna beat everyone down with a beat down. I think that's part of the problem with the John Wick character. He is unkillable and is never really gonna get in any trouble. Even though you're led to believe he dies at the end of the most recent one. That's got some great action in it. That one, so good. The bit where he goes into the house and he's got like the exploding shotgun and the camera comes up and you're looking at top down. Oh, fantastic. So yeah, Wick. Okay. Maybe it's Wick. John Wick. John Wick wins. Okay. So what are we doing now? What are we giving Rambo First Blood, as it's called? It's called First Blood. What are we giving it? Well, I gave it a 3.5 on my Letterboxd because the first half is so strong and it's a really cracking setup, even though it does start to get bigger and sillier inevitably for the back end. It's too good to be anything lower than a 3.5. What does that equate to out of 100? Now for me, at 80 and above, anything over 80 and above, 80 feels like a 4-starer. And It's not 4 stars. Rambo's not, because it's not quite interesting enough towards the end. I'm not fussed by the politics of it. It just starts to go a little bit boring action-wise, and it's not well done enough. So it's got to be a 79. So let's see, what does Joe think I thought of this movie? Joe?
Thanks, Adam. That's right. I'm back, and I'm here to predict what I think Adam's score out of 100 for the film First Blood will be. This is really hard, and it won't be hard for you when you're listening, because you'll have just heard him talk for, I don't know, at least 25 minutes all about this film, and you'll have a really clear grasp on whether he liked it or not. I don't know. I don't have any idea. So I'm going to play it safe, and on the basis that I don't think he will have loved it, because I just don't think it's a great, 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 great film, but also I don't think he will have hated it, because in theory it's exactly the kind of film that he should like. I think out of, and also, one last thing, sorry, that his scoring system out of 100 is clearly so very different to what it is out of 5, I'm going to say that he's given Rambo First Blood a 74 out of 100. Okay, Adam, how close was I?
Pretty close, mate, pretty close. You know, there's these little lovely little gems of moments in this movie that make it better than a 74. So yeah, it's a 79. It's a 79. I've got little to no interest in Sylvester Stallone as an actor or his films. I'll watch them when they come on. Fond memories of The Specialist with Sharon Stone. He's quite good in Copland. But it's amazing that someone who doesn't seem like such a great actor could be in so many movies and has played so many iconic characters. I guess in the same way that Keanu Reeves and Arnold Schwarzenegger have done in the same way. I mean, do we get guys like this anymore? Who don't ostensibly have much range, but are just cinema? The answer's no. Isn't that sad? Burp, burp. Burp, burp.
Burp, burp. Burp, hello? Burp.
Hello, is that Homer?
Speaking.
Hi, Homer. You've answered, sorry. Been trying to get through to you for months.
For months?
Yeah. Okay. It's Sir Christopher Nolan here.
Oh, yes. My agent told me you'd been calling. I actually didn't realise you had my personal number.
Well, I've got ways and means, Homer. I've got ways and means. When I put my mind to something, mm-hmm. you can bet your bottom dollar Sir Christopher Nolan gets it done. And I got your number.
Right.
I called it. And you've answered it. You didn't reply to my emails.
No.
All my letters, all my faxes.
Well, not much of one for correspondence.
No.
But I don't wish to be rude either, so how can I help you?
Well, it's a bit late in the day because it's already happened, but I've taken what is considered one of your stories.
Right.
Although it's unclear if it is. The Odyssey. Yeah, you know The Odyssey?
That's definitely one of mine, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not unclear.
All that is I've just made it into a movie, and I just thought I'd give you a courtesy call to say it's coming out in a couple of months, and love to just have you, you know, a little pull quote for the poster, you know.
Right.
This film is everything, Homer, you know, something like that. Or this film blew my socks off, Homer.
Homer.
Or this film is everything that it should be and is honors the text and also transcends the text and is better than anything I could have ever done, Homer. You know, just those kinds of yeah. Can you get like something
well,
like that?
Well, to be honest with you, I'm a little bit surprised because as I said, my agent had mentioned that you've been trying to get in touch and had also mentioned that you were interested in acquiring the rights to The Odyssey. I would have hoped that my lack of response to you could have indicated the lack of interest I have in giving you the rights to The Odyssey. And I regret to inform you that I have actually given another director the rights to The Odyssey previously. So I think you might be in breach of several legal obligations by making the film. So if I were you, I would make sure you need to tell the producers not to release it at this stage.
if you watch it and you realise that you'd really like it.
No, I'm not. Listen, I've seen... Look.
Hang on. Do you not like my films?
I didn't want to do this.
Listen, mate, no one cared about... No one was talking about The Odyssey. No one. It was dead in the water. Pun intended.
It's not true.
It was absolutely 100% true.
Ralph Fiennes made a film about The Odyssey the year before, and I gave him some rights as well because he's a terrific actor.
No one went to see that movie. No one even knew it came out.
Several people saw it.
As soon as Sir Christopher Nolan came sniffing around,
no.
And I've made the movie, as soon as I did, it's all anyone can talk about.
Look, Chris.
Odyssey this, Odyssey that.
Wait 3,000 years and see if anyone's talking about Inception, okay? No one will be talking about Inception in 3,000 years. People are still talking about Homer. Legacy, how long something lasts, lasting power, staying power, this is what defines true art. And I'm sorry, but you don't have it.
The thing with the Odyssey, right? Okay, it's all about story and archetypes, and that's what I'm so good at. I don't need to dabble in nuance. It's all about, and also in it is people telling stories within stories. I'm the absolute master. I'm going to blow your bloody socks off. All right,
people, fine.
You're nitpicking, right? You're not the first person to nitpick about who I've cast.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. I'm prepared to give you a chance. I'm sorry that I lost my cool about it. I never intended to offend you. If you've made the film already, I'm sure there's a great deal of expense involved. I'm certain that you'll make it right with my agent retrospectively, because, of course, your films always perform commercially well. I want to hear a bit more about it, though. Tell me who you've cast in it to try and relax me about this whole notion.
Well, who else do you want to lead a flick like this? All right.
Well, I can think of a few names. I mean, I thought Ralph Fiennes was fantastic in The Return. As I said, that film that came out last year that people did see and enjoy. A very true rendition of my work, actually.
Yeah, but that's a bit art house. You know, right. I'm the big screen. I'm big boffo box office.
And thinking of your films before, I think Leo's been fantastic. I thought Christian Bale's been really good in some of your work as well. In fact, Hugh Jackman I thought was fantastic, and I think Hugh Jackman has the gall to play Homer potentially. So I'm imagining that you've cast a really fine actor.
Jackman is a bit of a song and dance man, and he's a little bit, you know, he doesn't quite have the gravitas that I'm after. I was after, because as I say, I've already shot it, but yeah, doesn't have the gravitas. So I said no. His name didn't even come up, to be honest. And I loved working with him on The Prestige.
That's a shame, yeah. Shame, because he's terrific. He's actually very... I just watched him in the Sheep Detectives, and I thought that was a wonderful story and a wonderful death scene.
Yeah, that's where he belongs, in a small film that no one really saw.
Well, that's very rude.
Christian Bale is sort of aged out a bit. You know, and again, he doesn't really command the IMAX screen that I need. You know, I need someone like...
You can't say Christian Bale is aged out when you're talking to a man who's several thousand years old.
All right, don't take it personally. I mean cinematically aged out, all right? So all I've done is I've gone with someone who I've worked with very recently.
I can't wait. I'm excited to hear. Someone huge.
He's an everyman.
A fantastic actor.
And this guy, he's decent. He doesn't have to be fantastic. He just has to be decent.
No. Surely you've cast one of the best actors, one of the best working actors.
No, I'm not interested in that. No. Christian Bale wasn't one of the best actors ever when I cast him as Batman.
He was very good, though.
Yeah, but also...
He had a really strong hand on the tiller.
I had a strong hand on the tiller. Trust in Nolan. And so I've gone for Matt Damon, all right?
Just say that again. Say it again.
Matt Damon.
You went for Matt Damon.
Matt Damon. He does such great work.
Matt Damon is Odysseus.
Wait, listen. He does such great work in Interstellar. He surprises you in that flick. Okay? And he has grown as a performer. He's fantastic and talented, Mr. Ripley. Everyone's down on Damon these days. And I just think all I want...
I mean, look...
...is someone stoic... He's stoic. Someone who's an everyman. He's an everyman. I don't need nuance. I need I mean, I do need charisma. I'm worried that I haven't got that, but let's find out.
Surely he wasn't your first choice. Who's refusing you to play Odysseus? How many people turned you down before you got to Matt Damon?
No. Everyone wants to work for me. I get first pick.
Matt Damon was your first choice for Odysseus.
No, I just really thought about it, and I thought Matt Damon over everyone else.
I can't believe you've done this.
You don't know what it's like. You don't know what the movie's like.
I mean, I do. I've got some idea now. You've put Matt Damon, you know, Goodwill Odysseus. I don't think so.
Oh, that's just a cheap shot. I've worked with him. I've worked with the same actors time and again because I know what I can get out of them, and those relationships, you cannot put a price on.
I'm not sure I'm going to get over that one. Who have you cast as Odysseus's fair maiden?
What's her name? Penelope?
The Queen?
Queen
Penelope.
She's called Queen Penelope.
Who, of course, has the crucial role of staying the power of Odysseus back on Ithaca, where there are numerous suitors waiting for her hand in marriage, waiting for her to leave her grieving for her assumed dead husband and accept one of them in order that the power balance of the island shift. She has to be an incredibly powerful actor, very masculine in many ways. I thought, for example, Juliette Binoche was just terrific in The Return. So I'm sure, again, fine, you've got Matt Damon, but to balance that out, you must have an actor of just unparalleled caliber. I'm assuming you've gone for a Meryl Streep type person.
She's too old. The age has got to match.
That's why I said Meryl Streep type person. Chris, I haven't got the patience to deal with this bullshit, okay? Just tell me who you've got. A Meryl Streep-like person?
Well, she's Meryl Streep adjacent. She's been in movies with Meryl Streep. And more importantly, she's been in a movie that I've made. Two movies. And
what? Another one?
She's good. Anne Hathaway.
Anne Hathaway. The Devil Wears Penelope.
You like to just bring... you just love your cheap shots. Like, oh, let's say a shit film and then their name into it.
The way she cries in Les Mis, honestly, it's like, tone it down a bit. You're not actually on the stage.
Listen, that's the director's fault. The director is in charge of the performance. He's stuck her up the wrong alley. I would never do that. Sure, Hathaway doesn't have the chops in Brokeback Mountain. Sure. But she's steely.
What's she choppy in?
Hmm?
Name one film she's choppy in.
Devil Wears Prada.
Nope.
Okay, hang on a sec.
Another one. What was she in with you previously?
Hang on. She's sort of choppy in Love and Other Drugs.
No. Anne Hathaway gives some of the most inauthentic performances I've seen in a working actor. I'm from a time where art was about truth. Anne Hathaway is from a time where art is not about truth.
I think she's a star, and I cast a star, I didn't cast an actor. And she's a star who can emote. She's good in Rachel Getting Married. She's good in... I quite like her in One Day. She's got a very silly accent in that. I like. She's good in The Dark Knight Rises. Oh. She's a good Catwoman.
Okay. What about Telemachus?
Now you're gonna love this. You were gonna love. Listen, mate. There's no unequivocally. You are gonna love who I've got for Telemachus
because it's a very serious role and it's a lot of fragility in this role as well. This is someone who has to accept weakness as part of their performance, as part of their being. It's a very nuanced performance required for Telemachus.
Now, you're going to love this because I've never worked with this actor before.
New blood, okay.
New blood.
Okay.
Right?
We're thinking of a young, you know, so who are the people that are... Oh, for example, what about that guy Franz from the Bird movie, from Bird. What was his name again? That German actor, terrific, fantastic, you know?
Yeah, again, too niche, too art house. I need stars.
Why?
I need heft, archetype. That's just what I want. I want archetypes.
I thought you were the star. I thought people would come and see the film because it's a Chris Nolan film. Why do you need to put these people in it as well?
movie stars are stars for a reason, because they compel. Keanu Reeves isn't a great actor. He's a star. And that's why I've gone for Tom Holland.
Spider-Man.